So this will be the last lecture in the summer. So I will travel this after this Friday, and so maybe this next fall we will see whether we can do something else. And in the last lecture, I start to talk about the tensor category theory for the topological excitations. And so let me see what's So the important concept, so let's summarize a little bit of the results. So what is what's going on? So we have discussed called the fusion category. So fusion category, you can say, try to describe a particle in one dimension. Okay, so we have a lot of a particle in one dimension. So you can label them as I, J, K, and et cetera, those parts in one dimension. And so then what is our physical data? Our physical data is, I suppose we have a ring here. So our physical data is that when you have a particle in this one dimensional ring, we have a total vector space we call the fusion space. So this is what we know. So physically, actually, it's pretty simple. It's that we have all kind of trap Hamiltonian. I have a delta HI, which is a particular Hamiltonian trap, this kind of excitation. We have another trap Hamiltonian, trap another excitation. You know, Hamiltonian have a different trap, have a different shape, may trap different quasi-particle. So then we, when we diagonalize this total Hamiltonian with a trap, then we assume the spectrum have a degenerate ground state under the gap. There's a continuum here. And this fusion space is actually, it's a space of a degenerate ground states. So that's physically what is a fusion space. Okay. And this is our physical data. So therefore, the in one dimension, if you want to have a very most general theory of a particle in one dimension, and what is the physical data you have, is that when you have a little trap to trap particle of different type, then for each particle different type, you get a vector space. So that is the most general description. So as example, for example, suppose Hamiltonian have an SO3 symmetry, and then the different trap may trap like spin 1, spin 2, spin 3 excitation. And then this ground state subspace will be the tensor product state of a spin 1 representation and spin 2 representation, spin 3 representation, etc. So this will be the one example which you have a symmetry. But however, even when you don't have a symmetry, it is possible that this trap may give you degenerate ground state space. Okay, and then a different one-dimensional theory or different one-dimensional topological particle or different one-dimensional statistics can be viewed as a, you know, how many kind of a particle, how many kind of this structure can we have? Certainly the simplest structure will be for all kind of trap, the degenerate is always one-dimensional. So that's what kind of means the one-dimensional state is kind of trivial. But sometimes you have a non-trivial situation, the subspace have a non-trivial dimension. And we could have a list the when you have a particle types, and from here we can get a dimension. So D is really equal to the dimension of this vector space. Okay. And this will be the data. So for the collection of particle you get dimension. But this data is not enough to characterize it. But actually, this dimension is really this we call the fusion algebra. This is what discussed. This is okay. So this dimension actually let me have a notation. Is that the notation is that the how many different ways to fuse IJK into identity particle? So this is the fusion coefficient that we discussed last time. And this happened to be the dimension of this vector space. But we have more. So when we view these two particles from very far away, then this particle may behave like another particle M. Okay. However, this another particle actually is composite. Suppose this IJK is so-called simple. This M can be composite. So that means it's a sum, it's direct sum of something. So what you know is that MIJ then sum. So basically this fusion became MI cross J equal to this. Okay. So this really tell us how dimension for this fusion space changes when we fuse particle. Okay. But in the last lecture, we say even this NIJK is not enough. Okay. And we need something more because the fusion space, when you do the fusion, we have to see how the fusion space fit together. When we fuse IJ into when we bring this IJ together, then this the used to be degenerate space, so the state used to be degenerate, may split, because when the IJ getting closer, this near degeneracy became worse, so they may split. And then they split into group of degenerate states. And this group of, there are several L prime, several L double prime, and maybe several M prime, M double prime, things like this. They split into this. And then when you fuse this, if you fuse this K closer to this bound states, they may split further into some L. So this is, we can fusion for IJK, three particle. You can fuse IJ first, they split. The fuse K, then it split further. But this is splitting naturally give us a basis of this degenerate subspace. So there's a big choice, give us choice basis. Then if you fuse them differently, we fuse JK first, they split differently. Then fuse I to the JK bound states, then again you fuse into a sequence of say L. But this sequence, this different order for fusion give us different bases. And these two choice of bases are related by this F symbol. Some unitary matrix we call F symbol. In the top line. It's a related F symbol. So that's this top line here is just this different bases. This way of fusion and another way of fusion and I'll give it another basis and this related by this F symbol. So this F symbol is another data. It's more complicated. So in addition to this NIJK, another data. So it turns out that these two data is enough. So these two data, NIJK and this F symbol, completely describe the so-called statistics of a particle in one dimension, although we don't have exchange, so but we have fusion. And a certain F symbol should satisfy this condition, the Pangan condition. So this is what we discussed last time. But at this stage, we see something. If you remember, you know, we discussed the string net wave function, then we say that the string with different shape can be related by some kind of linear representation, a linear matrix, actually, which is also unitary matrix. So then this actually describe, they have similar Pangan identity. So this would give us a string net wave function, some string wave function, generalization loop wave function. Okay. It's amazing that the mathematics of these two is identical. So on one hand, we can use the fusion category to describe one-dimensional particles, their statistics, in some sense. On the other hand, we can use the same mathematical fusion category to construct two-dimensional wave functions. So what is their relation? And the relation actually is the following, is that it turns out that the two-dimensional wave function construct using this fusion category, it describes certain kind of topological order. And this topological order so have a so-called gappable boundary. The boundary can be gapped. And then when you have gappable boundary, this you have you may have a boundary excitations. You know, boundary is non-trivial. And this boundary particle would satisfy the same fusion category. So this is the relation. So that is the fusion category. So in a sense, so precisely, it's a better way to understand this string net construction is falling. We can using this fusion category to describe one-dimensional system. And then we say that, do we have a lattice 1D system really produce this kind of particle? So this is like a low energy effective theory, which describes the possible statistics of a particle in 1D. So next question is that, do we have an actual one-dimensional system which realize this kind of statistics? The answer is no. Because in 1D, there's no topological order. So 1D system without symmetry always product states. There's nothing like that. But however, so that means that this kind of a structure is anomalous. It is a low energy property, which is self-consistent, but not realizable. It's only realizable as a boundary of a two-dimensional states. So that is anomalous. So basically, this is what happened here, is that this kind of a fusion category describe this 1D statistics. It's always anomalous. It's we always need a 2D theory to realize it. And then you ask, what kind of two-dimensional wave function realize have the boundary which have a particle with this kind of statistics property? Then the answer is the string net wave function. That the string net wave function happened to be the using the data of anomalous one-dimensional statistics to construct a two-dimensional wave function which realize this anomalous 1D states. And they say, what do you mean by anomaly? So actually, this anomaly is all gravitational anomaly. So there's no symmetry, no gauge theory. So when I say anomalous, it means a gravity anomaly. And they are also called, I think they also correspond to called a global gravitational anomaly. And so almost all this kind of new from anomaly point of view, because the gravitational anomaly, we mostly know the perturbative gravitational anomaly coming from the related to the gravitational Shin-Simon term. But this theory don't have perturbative gravitational anomaly, but they only have a non-perturbative one. But non-perturbative one only know a few examples, but now we know many examples. So this is a kind of the picture of the fusion category. We describe one-dimensional statistics, which always anomalous, so it's realized by the boundary of a two-dimensional theory. And two-dimensional theory happens to be the string net wave function. Okay. So this is kind of one thing. And so next thing is that we want to go to higher dimension. Okay. So there's a fusion category really describe the statistics of fusion of a particle in one dimension. But such structure also exists for particle in higher dimension. The answer is very simple. We just put the particle on the line. Suppose in higher dimension, we can always put the particle on the line and pretend they are in one dimension and fuse them together. Then we have the same structure. Okay. So that's it. So therefore, the same fusion category also exists in any dimension. So to describe a statistical particle in any other dimension, we at least need the fusion category data. So the particle have it. Okay, but however, because in higher dimension, things are more restricted. Remember, this fusion coefficient, this nijk, in one dimension, this ij may not be symmetric. But in higher dimension, they must be symmetric. So therefore, higher dimensional theory only realize more special kind of fusion category. I don't know what they call them. I would call them a symmetric, but mathematician may not call that. I don't know what they call them. Maybe abelian, I don't know. Whatever, this symmetric. But this symmetric is a higher dimension result. Why? Because in higher dimension, we can exchange these two particles by going to the higher dimension, you know. So therefore, fusion of ij and the fusion of ji is the same. So therefore, we have this more constraint. So the in higher dimension, the fusion category is this. But however, but f certain we have f symbol. But in higher dimension, we have something more. You know, f means when you fuse two particles differently, we can get a different basis and what's the relation between basis. And but in higher dimension, we also have R called the braiding. In some sense, braiding is kind of like, suppose you have ij. We make ij close together. And then they may split, we get the basis. Then we have a ji. When ji getting closer, they may split it differently. So this, again, we get a different choice of basis. And so then this, so there's a relation of this the states. So this relation is this so-called R matrix. Okay. So I really want to say maybe this is this way explaining is not so good. So maybe let me put this way. When we fuse ij together, certainly there is a Guangxi subspace. But when you have a ji in different order, we also have a Guangxi subspace. But these two Guangxi subspace are two different subspace of a total Hilbert space. They are different space. So this R here basically is a mapping from one space to another space. I think in this case, it's really not a choice of basis. It's really mapping from one space to another space. I write this as a matrix because I pick a canonical basis in each of a subspace. So you write this as a matrix. But conceptually, it's better to think of this as mapping from one space to another vector space, two different vector space. So in some sense, this R doesn't mean anything. It's not really very meaningful. But however, if you change twice, you ij, you change once, you get R. If you change twice another in the same direction, you get another R. So the two R together actually is like a moving I around the j by 2 pi. This is meaningful. Then this R, two R together, like this picture, two exchange together will become a matrix mapping from one space to itself. And this really describes so-called mutual statistics. So in mathematics, it's called double braiding. We braid twice. In physical, mutual statistics. So therefore, the two R together would describe this mutual statistics. So this is, that's it. So this is the actual data. So I mentioned that in two dimension, we not only have nijk and f to describe a fusion, we have actual data R to describe braiding. And that's basically it. So this is three pieces of data would describe fully non-abelian statistics in two dimension. So this is three pieces of data is what we need to fully characterize non-abelian statistics. And to understand this R a little bit better, so let's introduce a notion of spin of the particle. So spin of particle basically is if you rotate the particle by 2 pi, it turns out the particle may have a fractional spin. So what is this fractional part of spin? It's not integer, but what is the fractional part? So this is SI defined mode 1. So actually, this spin and R is related. If you know R, we know the spin. How? Well, So let's consider the following thing. We can suppose we have an ij which can fuse into k. So we have ij fuse into k. Okay, but this you may have several k, okay, as a direct sum. And obviously, if you fuse the whole thing, if you rotate the whole thing by 2 pi, it's just like rotating k by 2 pi. So ij together and k is the same thing. Okay, so that is so we get this. If you rotate k by 2 pi, we get the phase e to the I 2 pi sk. But however, rotate ij by 2 pi can be viewed as the following. We braid ij twice. You know, rotate ij by 2 pi is like a braided ij twice. But at the same time, we rotate I by 2 pi and rotate j by 2 pi. Because when you do braiding, there is an assumption. The particle orientation not change. When you braid new particle, we just do this without self-rotation. But when you rotate the whole bound state, you not only have a braiding, you also have a self-rotation. So therefore, rotating ij by 2 pi is like a double braiding twice, and also plus a self-rotation. So then we have a relation that a self-rotation gave us a 2 pi si and 2 pi sj, that's self-rotation. And the braiding twice, we have 2 r. Then we have this relation or something. Okay. So this is a relation that if you know r, we know s by solving this. And here I want to say that I try to assume if you know s, we know r. We don't know if that's true or not, but let's assume so. And so this is a statement is that we don't know the counterexample, but nobody can prove it. So why we want to do that? Because R is complicated, S is simple. Remember, I say that to describe a non-abelian statistics, I need a data, nijk, we need a F, that's very complicated, we need R, that's also very complicated. But then, there seems a theorem, or not theorem, the conjecture or belief that we don't need to introduce F and R. We just need S, speed. Maybe Nijk and S is enough to describe everything. So this is a big assumption. And things so far so good, you know, we don't know how to prove it, so what do? We just accept it and go on. Unless we hit a wall, we saw, there's an inconsistency by assuming this. But so far, so good. We are still going and without hitting anything. And but certainly, when we hit a wall, you say, okay, this assumption is not correct. But examine what kind of wall it is, we probably can understand what kind of mistake, what kind of error we made. But so far, but however, so using S to replace F and R really simplifies things a lot. And then we using this, we can have a very easy quantitative classification of all non-abelian statistics in two dimensions. So this is a thing we try to say. Okay, and certainly I just show some pictures that. Certainly, if using NFR calculation, F should satisfy Panic identity, R and F also satisfy these relations, you know, coming from this some kind of a graph. I think this is a hexagon identity, and etc. And by the way, I will not go into this. So in the following, what I try to describe is that. Instead of using F and R, we replace this by spin. This is a particle spin. And we try to conjecture that N and S will be enough to characterize non-abelian statistics. So this is the conjecture. And then using that, we want to obtain a classification of a non-abelian statistics. But when you have a classification of non-abelian statistics, what you actually have is a classification of topological order. In a sense, because the topological order produces non-abelian statistics, Then we try to say maybe different topological order would produce different non-abelian statistics. And we hope there's a one-to-one correspondence between the two, which is more or less correct, also not exactly correct. And but let's don't worry about that. So therefore, when we say we can use N and S to classify non-abelian statistics, while I'm thinking maybe we can use N and S to classify topological order. So that is an idea. But this idea is related to some very early work. That is, we can use the modular transformation, a modular representation to classify topological order. So the idea is the following. Remember, on a torus, those squares have a periodic boundary condition, so those are torus. So on the torus, there is a degenerate ground state. Okay. So the degenerate ground state is, so for every torus, there is a space of a degenerate ground state, so it's a vector space. Degenerate ground state gives us a vector space. But when we change the shape of a torus, so this shape, torus shape can change, then this the degenerate ground state would be a different vector space. So therefore, for every shape of a torus, we have a vector space. But a different shape of a torus is parameterized by the complex number. So you can view this point as a complex number in a complex plane. So this complex number describe a shape of a torus. So therefore, this upper complex plane describes a shape of a torus. Then on every point, we have a vector space. So actually, I have a vector bundle on the upper half plane. But however, for tau equal to, so for tau, this is a standard modular property. Suppose you have one shape, which is tau, another shape is tau plus one. So basically, it's this shape and this shape. This is tau plus one. But then you realize that these two shapes are actually the same. Because these two shapes, these two torus is the same torus when you do just up to this relabeling, these two relabeling of a coordinate. If you relabel the coordinate, these two are actually the same torus. So therefore, many points in the upper half plane actually is not same, not different shape. Actually, they are same shape up to this coordinate relabeling. So only the different shape is in this small triangle. So these are different shape. But from here, tau to tau plus one and tau to minus one over tau, these two transformation just map the same torus. And this gives us a non-abelian barrier space. Basically, we can deform the torus from here to here. But this actually is a loop because this torus and this torus is the same. So this is a loop. When you have a loop, the degenerate ground state, when you deform, would go back to the same space, but up to the unitary transformation. This unitary transformation is a non-abelian barrier space. And this non-abelian barrier space is called S and T. The non-abelian barrier space associated with this kind of one tau to tau plus one is a T, and from associated with 90 degree rotation is S. And so this is S and T. And so actually this S and T is a very close related to the data Nijk and Si. So this is very, very close related. And I will describe the relation a little bit later, but at least the e to the 2 pi Si is equal to the kind of equal to the diagonal term of the t. T is unitary, so therefore diagonal eigenvalue of t is always a complex phase. And this phase happens to give us speed. Okay. And so therefore, the conjecture is following, is that there is a conjecture that this S and T, this modular transformation, fully characterized topological phase. So that's conjecture. And this conjecture turned out to be the same as a conjecture that N and S fully describe topological phase. So this ST is very important, but here I just want to mention that using this non-abelian barrier phase is more difficult way to compute SNT, and the simpler way is using wave function overlap. Basically, for example, for the S, what you do is that you just, so this psi beta is the degenerate ground state. Beta just label different degenerate ground states. You just make a 90 degree rotation and do the overlap. And remember, our Hamiltonian do not have a 90 degree rotation symmetry. So you rotate the ground state, you no longer get the ground state, you get something extra. So this overlap is tiny. So it's exponentially small. But then there's a conjecture that there is an exponential small factor. But after we remove this, then the next term, which is L equal to zero, there's no L one term, there's no linear term. Next term is L equal to zero. L equal to zero is a constant term, do not scale with a system size. This L equal to zero term is a universal, which I write as here. This is a constant prefactor. So this is a universal. And then by doing this wave function overlap, you can compute this S and T. You know, T just you do this a shear deformation. S is 90 degree rotation. And both may have this exponential small vector, but after you remove this, the constant part is a universal. So this may be a simple way to compute the S and T. But once you know S and T, you know the topology order fully. So that is this may become the way to fully detect topology order numerical at least. So maybe let's don't worry about this. So actually, this SNT you obtain from the wave function which have a topology order is directly related to the NIJK and the spin. So this is a one direction. If you know SNT, we know NIJK and a spin. So here, I don't know how to explain that. So there's an actual shift factor. It's not directly related to the spin, but there's a central charge correction here. Okay. And I don't have a good explanation. I have some feeling what it's about, but I cannot explain very well. And this relation between S and N actually is a famous Valenda formula. Yeah. And so let me try to explain why we have this Valenda formula. And I think maybe here. So there's this picture is one way to explain the Valenda formula. And I think I need to prepare a little bit. Yeah. Okay. First point is that what is those lines? You know, what are those? So those lines are so-called tunneling process. We create a pair of particle hole, then we move them all the way around, then annihilate. So this tunneling process describes this line. So that's the one way to describe this line. And then remember, the moving particle is like a hopping particle. Hopping particle is like a string operator. So you can also view that as a matrix element string operator. We apply the string operator to a state and consider it's average. So basically, for example, suppose we have a space, our space time is this. So example there's some space time. Then this is our spatial slice. Then we have we can apply a string operator, then do the path integral. That's like we have a state evolving from minus infinity to this time, and has state evolved from plus infinity backwards to this time. Then the matrix element of this whole state with this string operator will be this line. So this closed loop actually this complex number. This complex number either describes the amplitude of this tunneling process or describe the matrix element of string operator between two states which evolved from plus minus a plus infinity or minus infinity, you know. So this is the picture we draw. So just numbers. And then using this interpretation, we have a quite interesting relation. Suppose you have a string operator, autonomy process of ice particle. Then you have another string operator and autonomy process of a J particle. But in this linked way. So you can either use tunneling to view this, or you can view, you apply string operator in a very interesting way. You know, in different part, you apply string operator in different order. Okay. Then, but this picture just an amplitude, just a complex number, and this complex number is a Sij, or more or less, it's a, this S matrix. You say, how can that be? This is very strange, you know. And the way to see this is the following. To say, what is this ground state? What is the degenerate ground state on the torus? Okay. One way to get degenerate ground state is the following. There's a particular degenerate ground state we call psi 1, which actually is this. It's a solid torus. You know, torus is two-dimensional. So let's consider solid torus. So the inside this ring is a solid. Solid torus is three-dimensional. You can view this three-dimensional solid torus as a three-dimensional space-time. Then there's a, you know, the center of solid torus is a ring. That is start a universe. And then we have a big bang. A universe starts to expand, and we start to have a torus. And then from this initial zero space volume, then evolve into a torus. And this time evolution gave us a particular state on the surface of this space-time, which is a spatial torus. And this surface state is a particular ground state we call the psi 1. But there is degenerate ground state on the torus. What are they? Well, those can be created by falling. We do a particle tunneling process, or we just add a loop of this I particle. You know, quickly after Big Bang, we add the loop, string operator, then we let it evolve. Because this loop operator is buried under the surface. So on the surface, there's no operator. But anyway, this loop operator would affect the state on the boundary, and this would give us state I. So from this picture, it's clear that the quasi-particle type and the ground state degeneracy has a one-to-one correspondence, and this is relation. All the different quasi-particle loop operators create a different ground state. Okay. Then we can consider the matrix element. But with a little bit, I don't know, maybe they call it with S hat, with some kind of twist. So what we do is falling. So one need a really good imagination. So this S is a 90-degree rotation. So basically we have two such things. Okay, we have two such things. With I going through it, and another thing with a J going through in the middle. Okay. And then we rotate this torus by 90 degrees, then glue them back. So then we get a space with no boundary. You know, this solid torus have boundaries. Boundary is a torus. And this solid torus also have a boundary. The boundary is torus. But if we rotate the boundary of the, we rotate this torus by 90 degrees, then glue on top of this boundary. So two boundaries can glue together, disappear. And then we get a three manifold with no boundary. What is this three manifold? It turned out to be S3. Just a three-dimensional sphere. Okay. And so then in this, I had to imagine. So actually the other torus is like in this hole here, we have another torus, solid torus kind of goes through this hole and then wrap around. And you need some imagination to see this is three sphere. And then now we have two loops. Now these two loop buried inside the torus became a two loop in three sphere. And this two loop in three sphere is just two linked loop. That's it. So therefore, this the amplitude two linked loop inside the three sphere, this path integral just gave us Sij. But certainly there's some constant. So there's some constant factor which you don't worry too much about it. But this is the idea. So to link the loop gave us Sij. This tunneling process gave us Sij. And from this, you can derive Valentine formula. So now we can consider the following. So now we have a one loop, but with a two loop. So the IJL, these two loop together, you can do that. And then we can see that the middle loop can be deformed into something maybe very simple. So we have this loop, okay, but then we can deform this loop as this, and this is a say L, and this is L. So this basically L bar. So this is a particle antiparticle, kind of almost parallel to each other. So there's a sense these two loops cancel each other, just like nothing. Because when you cut through it, it's like a particle, L bar, but L bar together is a trivial particle, so it's kind of nothing. So therefore, so this loop can be removed. So we're using this dotted line means removed, became this. Up to some coefficient, there is some constant coefficient, but this is a little complicated, but the idea is this. So we can get this. But when you do this, we see that one loop with two linked loop became two separate linked loop. So this became an S, this is another S. So you have a two S. So that's relation. So this amplitude is related, it's equal to the two S, the product two S. Okay. Then, so that's how we get the results. So therefore, on one side, we get a 2s, there's a 1s and a 2s, 2s together. But however, on this side, now we can move this loop next to this j loop. So therefore, this loop is almost like we have two loops like this, just next to each other. A two loop, and this is I, this is j. But remember that as a string operator, the string operator have a relation that's nijk wk. So this is another way to describe particle fusion, but using string operator. When you multiply two string operators together, usually it's not equal to the third string operator. It's equal to the superposition, the sum of a several string operator. So this is the superposition. But certainly from this point of view, from this algebra of string operator, it's not obvious why the coefficient must be integer. Because algebra string operator, this coefficient can be complex number. But for some mysterious reason, which I don't understand, that's for the topology order, this quasi-particle string operator have the algebra have this integer coefficient. And the positive integer coefficient is pretty amazing. I don't know why to understand how to understand it. But anyway, let's say using this. When using this, you can see that these two string operators together can be viewed as a nijk, can be viewed as a one string operator k. But certainly with this coefficient nijk, that's a fusion. So therefore, the other side gave us a nijk. Then we have another S. So we relate the product 2s with n times s. Okay. And this is basically what you try to explain here is that's basically Valentine formula. But certainly, let's ignore this factor. This factor associated with this some kind of a coefficient. But this s is unitary. So therefore, this s star actually can move to this side. So this is n times s equal to s times s. So this is the idea. And so I really didn't go into the detail, but follow this kind of idea. If you set things up correctly using this idea, you can derive this Valentine formula. So this formula tell us this n and s are related. Okay. So with this, and we can we are ready to describe the theory. We call it a simplified theory of non-abelian statistics or topological order or module tensor category. The simplified means we have the assumption N and S is enough. We don't know whether that's true or not, but let's assume this is true. We get a simplified theory. So what is simplified theory? Just condition, boundary condition. We say, we try to say N and S describe non-abelian statistics, but not certainly not arbitrary N, not arbitrary S. So only when N and S have certain conditions, they will describe non-abelian statistics. But what are those conditions? And certainly we have this condition. This condition is described before. That is that is the fusion of IJMK and this condition tells us that when you fuse IJK into L, yeah, this condition is discussed before, is that when you fuse IJK into L, there's two ways to do so. One way is that you can fuse IJ first, then K later, or you can fuse JK first, then I later, but they all at the end get to the L. And then these two different fusion should produce the same number of L. You know, when you fuse IJK to L, you may get several L's, but how many you can compute. Using first way of fusion, you get so many L, but from here, that's how many L you get. And in the second way, you get this way. So these two should be equal. So therefore, the N should satisfy this condition. Yeah. And then actually, we can rewrite this condition as a product. So if you define this, if you pick this first index as this index for Ni, some matrix, then view this jk as an index for matrix element. Then we can view this as a bunch of a matrix labeled by I. Then this condition then similarly is this matrix commute, the commuting matrix. Okay, so that's one point. And so this is a condition on N. Then there are conditions on S as well. So actually, if you know N, S cannot be arbitrary. So there is condition on S. So this condition on S is that we can construct an integer matrix. This matrix is always integer despite this factor. This matrix is always integer. And so that this integer matrix times S must give us integer vector. So this 0 mod 1 means integer vector. So that means S is not arbitrary real number. S is just some rational number. And so this is amazing that the topological spin, this spin can only be rational number, cannot be real number. So this is a theorem, this is a Waffa theorem because of this. Okay, so therefore, if you know N satisfy this condition, then from this you know the S. But this is not enough. You know, if you only have these two conditions, that's not enough. So there's a more condition. And the more condition would come from the modular matrix. Using Valenda, so we can using this, and there is another relation to relate N. Maybe let me type this. So then there's a relation related this T and S, this relation between T and S. And so this relation actually can be understood in the picture I just drew, which I erased. Let me draw again. So okay, yeah. So we have this okay, yeah, remember that this state psi j is I is actually is a solid horse with I with loop I inside. Then what is T? The T is like a shear. It's like a shear deformation or Dehn twist. So what we do is that we, the T operation is that we kind of, we break this, torus into, we kind of break this solid torus. Then we do the 2 pi rotation. After 2 pi rotation, then glue them back. So this is T operation is like a, so we have a state. After applying T, we just rotate this 2 pi, then glue them back. That's a T. Then sometimes if you do that, you still have loop of I. So you still get this. You know, when you do this, the loop of I is still, you still get this. But however, when you rotate by 2 pi, then glue them back, this particle I is like a rotate by 2 pi, then glue them back. So there's a phase. So that's it. So there's a phase is this. So that's why we have a phase. But then you ask, why we have this additional phase? Additional phase coming from the following fact. That we'll do that, not only this particle is rotated by 2 pi, that's give you a phase of this 2 pi rotation phase spin. Actually, this solid torus also twisted, so their curvature may change. So their background curvature may change. And actually, for topology order, when you integrate all the matter field, there is an effective theory which may have contained the topological transaminant term. And this topological transaminant term is non-trivial. If that's coefficient happens to be the C. And then when the curvature changes, that's why I believe this topological transaminant term may have an actual contribution. And this actual contribution is really this term coming from the change of curvature of a space. So therefore you can see that the S and T are related. Okay, but using N and the S, we can also get the S matrix. And this is a more complicated. I want to really explain it, but I just show some graphs which I'm just show some picture how this is, why this is, why this weird formula is okay. So, here I think I need to explain. Okay, yeah. So I need to explain one more thing, sorry. Then this self-linking of a loop actually is a S. Okay. How to see that? It's a falling. You should really have a bell. Because the coarser part is not point like. It has a shape. So when you do rotation, it's actually non-trivial. So therefore, to really describe this this quasi part is now really now point like they have a shape. People usually add a framing. So this framing just say splitting. They say this particle actually have a shape. Okay. So therefore, when you have a particle quasi part tunneling process, like this self linking loop, then you can do this without changing the orientation particle. So therefore, this we always do this. You know, we kind of do this loop this way, so without changing the framing. And so the picture I draw always may have this assumption. The framing always in one direction. When you're moving particle around, we are not rotating the particle. But this self-link without rotation, when you straighten out, happen to be this. This is a framing would rotate by 2 pi. So actually, the amplitude for the self-link without rotation corresponds to the straight line with the 2 pi rotation. So the self-link is this phase. So that is another important thing. And then from here, you can see that this is a fusion for ij. So we have ij together, then do this. So this actually gave us the spin for I and j. Yeah. So there's a to understand this spin for I relate to spin and ij, it's a little bit non-trivial. So what you do is that first we can slide one loop. So this actually is a let me see there. Yeah, okay, yeah. So this link to here, this actually two loop. This is one loop, this is another loop. So then you slide one loop this way and became this. So this sliding don't do anything, so they have same amplitude. Then you do the similar thing, you can pinch these two together to pinch to identity, you know, it's like we did before. And because this I and I bar and j bar became identity, so then we change this to this. So therefore this graph, what is this graph? This is a e to the I sj, this is e to the I si, that's a statistic. And this self-link loop is S, it's a S matrix. Okay. And then we can do this in a different way. And we can fuse IJ together to become a K. Okay. Then here we have this NIJK coming out. And then we can move this joint point, sliding them all the way to here. So these two graphs is the same thing. And this bubble again is nothing, can be removed. But there's something, you know, after this manipulation, you have another calculation on IJK. So this is how I get this relation. So this relation is that we have a NIJK come from a fusion. And we should move this SISJ to this side. So when I move this SISJ to this side, we have SISJ and S matrix. And on this side, we have a self-linking of K and NIJK, which is a picture here. You can see now we have a K is a self-link. So there's a e to the I SK, so the spin of K. But this fusion gave us NIJK. So basically, it gives you some flavor. If you play these games, you get these all kind of relations. So therefore, using N and S, we can get this relation. We can get the S matrix, and using the S, we can get the T matrix, and the S and T matrix should satisfy the representation of a modular group. So have this ST cube equal to S squared equal to C and C squared equal to 1. So that's another condition. So we have another condition. Then there's another condition which I don't know how again, using something like what I described, you can get yet another condition. I don't know what this condition is necessary or not, but anyway, at least here. But after all, what you try to say is that we can see that we can using NIJK and SI and to calculate the ST matrix and using modular group representation property, so those some condition. So you can get a bunch of condition.
So do all these conditions apply to the surface of the dimensional materials? Suppose you only have topological around the surface of a bulk.
Oh, okay. Very, very good question. Yes. Yeah, very, very good question. So those conditions, if you find N and S something, those conditions, then you get a modular tensor category, then you get a topological order, which have no anomaly. It's realizable in a 2D space. But then you ask, because those conditions are local, they're kind of effective theory. So maybe you should be able to get some condition for anomalous topology, which only live on the surface of a 3D material. And anomalous topology order only have one thing. You probably don't have this modular, this condition has should be relaxed. And this condition should be relaxed, and S do not have to be unitary. So S is not unitary. S is not invertible. Actually, this is a very physical thing. So actually, I don't know should we remove all of this. So, but we certainly should modify this other condition all there. So the condition I just described do not depend on this anomaly, non-anomaly. They should be all there. Only this this last condition need to be modified. And but the mainly is really that you can define S, but S is not invertible. S is not invertible. But in this case, I should modify this a little bit. I should put this S dagger to here. Then this Valina formula remain to be true even for non-invertible S. So this is the better way to write the Valina formula, not in this way. It's actually from it's Sn with a 2S here. And this condition is even valid when S is not invertible. And that's it. If you allow S to be non-invertible, then it's an anomalous topology order. If S is invertible, then it's anomaly free. And this is a have very physical condition, is that the S describe mutual statistics. S is invertible means the following. For every topological particle, for two topological particle, suppose we have two topological particles, we want to know whether they are the same or not. And this question can be answered by braiding other top particle around these two. If two particles are different, then there must be some particle with different braiding with them, so you can distinguish them. If there's no other particle can distinguish two particles via braiding, these two particles should be the same. And this is the condition for modular, so that S is invertible. So that means that if this topological is not anomalous, every topological excitation should be detectable by other topological excitation via these mutual statistics. If you abandon this property, then you get a surface state. So that's why in one dimension, all the fusion category is anomalous, because in one dimension we don't have braiding. There is no way to detect any topological excitation via something remote. We don't have this operation. So therefore, in one dimension, all the fusion category in one dimension is anomalous. But however, if S is not invertible, then it's anomalous. And as an example, so let's consider the following example. Suppose we have a bosonic system. We say this boson system have only trivial excitation and one kind of fermionic excitation. It is possible. You know, one trivial, one fermion. But then we have fermion excitation. This fermion excitation cannot be detected by another fermion via braiding because fermion around the fermion is trivial. And the one around the fermion also trivial. So it's impossible. So therefore, this particular topological order is not realizable. Only a single fermion topological excitation is not realizable in two dimensions. But however, if your topological excitation is one trivial, another is semion, then semion around the semion is a pi, it's detectable. So one excitation, one semion is allowed. Actually, this is a one filling fermion, one half Laughlin state, all boson. So only talking boson. Yeah. So then in one dimension on the surface falling, suppose you have a three-dimensional Z2 topological order where the Z2 charge happens to be the fermion. And then what you do is falling. In the three-dimensional topological, you have this Z2 vortex line. You see, water line condense on the boundary. That's how you form a, that's one particular boundary coming from water line condensation. So therefore, on the surface, the water line no longer topologization, it's just condensed. But however, this fermionic quasi-particle, it can still move from the box to the boundary. And this became non-trivial boundary. So therefore, a particular boundary of a Exactly. But however, this Z2 charge, which can be fermion, this Z2 charge can be fermion would survive the boundary. So therefore, in the boundary theory, have only trivial excitation and one fermion as a boundary of a three-dimensional Z2 topology order, but with a twist where Z2 charge is a fermion. Usually, Z2 topology order, Z2 charge is a boson, but here Z2 charge is a fermion. So this is a very, very good question. So actually, this theory, yeah, maybe that's next. This theory also describes anomalous topology order, but need a certain generalization. And we should not have this condition. But whether we should abandon them directly or we should replace this with some weak condition, which I don't know at the moment. But in general, the S is not invertible, it's anomalous topology order. So that's indeed another direction. So this setup gave us a classification of a topology order. It's not anomaly free topology order. And but certainly there's a very, very good question as how to generalize this to give you a classification of anomalous topology order. And which I don't know, and which would actually be very, very interesting. And so that's the last slide here. So basically, so this is how I produce this table. So this is kind of a table. Several tables. So this is one of a table. So just solving this N and S, so we can just we can get this table. So those are S. So those are S. And these are not N, but these are quantum dimension. N is hard to label, so I'm using quantum dimension to label N. So that's N and S, and then each row is a solution of those conditions. And here I just want to say that because we have a simplified theory, so we are not sure whether this is really true or not. So if this is not true, in which way this is wrong? So it's because those are necessary conditions. What we list is a necessary condition. So if every topology order should be here, but some solution may be fake, may not correspond to a topology order. So this is one possibility, is what we describe is wrong. So some solution may be fake. And another possibility is wrong is that a single solution, a single N and S may correspond to several topology order. This is also possible. So in these two ways, this could be wrong. But this table do contain all the topology order. And recently I'm in collaboration with Karen Shelton is that we try to realize all this topology order in this table using conformal field theory. Just using the pattern zero we just described before. Use pattern zero is very powerful. Using conformal field theory, pattern zero, you can construct wave function. We try to realize this. It turns out at least the one in this table all realizable by this pattern zero conformal field theory. So they are all really there. So we don't have a fake one so far. But certainly we don't know whether very complicated one, whether it's a fake or not. Then another thing, thanks for Sibir's question, is that we can do this for fermion topology order. And so I think Lan Tian just post the paper today, I hope. So maybe you can see that tonight. And but this is very, very much related to your question. So how to classify fermionic topology order? Again, the key question is that S is not invertible. Because the fermion topology order contains this parent fermion. This fermion is there. This elementary fermion is a part of a story. But this fermion have a trivial mutual statistics with every other topological excitation. Because topological excitation is being allowed means this fermion go around that should be mutually local because the topological excitation are described by single valued wave function. So wave function going around the topological excitation should be single valued. So therefore, fermion should have this parent fermion should have trivial mutual statistics with every topological excitation. So therefore, this trivial fermion is not detectable by any topological excitation in this story. So therefore, it's like anomalous. So in some sense, this fermion topological order is like anomalous topological order, but a very special kind of anomalous one. And so therefore, we have to deal with a situation where S matrix is not invertible. And then we have to using some modify this modular matrix condition. And but there is some mathematical framework we can do. And using a very similar approach, just find all the conditions on N and S. We still assume N and S describe everything. Then just collect a bunch of conditions on N and S, you can get this table. And so I just want to say that the most fermion topological order actually is a stacking of a fermion product states with a boson topological order. But a few of them is primitive. It's not, cannot be viewed as a stacking. And this is 2-0F is a trivial fermion product state. So those are stacking of a boson topological order. And this kind of boson topological order happened in Fibonacci. So the simplest fermion topological order contain four particle, trivial one, parent fermion, and a non-trivial one, and a bound state of a non-trivial one with a parent fermion. So in a sense, if you quotient out the parent fermion, only one non-trivial topological excitation, that's the simplest one. And there's four of them. The first one is Laughlin filling fraction, Laughlin bosonic guang, quantum Hall states stacked with a fermion product state. And this is a Fibonacci bosonic topological order stacked with a fermion product states. And this non-trivial one, the primitive one is not constructible from this stacking. And this one is related to this so-called SU2 level 6 transaminin theory somehow. And there's other thing. And looks like so far so good, at least for this simple one, all the topological order on this list, fermion topological order on list, can be constructed again by conformal field theory. Because most of them are a bosonic stacking with a fermion. But there's a few primitive one we already identified. They are related to the conformal theory. So there's another one here. So this one is a, so this fermion topological order is coming from this some orbifold. You know, there's some orbifold. And maybe I should stop here. So this basically is a attempt using only N and S to understand the non-Bini statistics and the collective topological order. It looks like one can go pretty far, and you know, and
so these tables obtained just by solving those nonlinear equations, or
yeah, not only non, it's better than solving nonlinear equations. They're finite search. Yeah, solving nonlinear equations is terrible.
Yeah.
If using N, F, and R, that's nonlinear equation, and we don't know how to solve this F symbol. But using N and S, this became finite search because of the so let me just say this.
But for all of those solutions, you have a CFT, explicit CFT, or some you don't?
They all have, yeah.
You know the CFT for all of
them. For the solution operators so far, all have a conformal field theory realization. So we are confident they are there. There could be more complex one, we may have a fake one, but so far so good. But the most important thing is that N is a discrete, so this is a finite search. As you say, N is not too big. You make some limit on N. And this Fafard theorem is very crucial because S is a real number. But using Fafard theorem, S, such that this condition became discrete. So therefore, it's just finite search. Then you have discrete set of N and S. Then you just, in next page, you just, to see which of those satisfy this, those additional conditions. So those conditions just checked by this finite comparison. It's still exponential calculation, you know, when N became large and the things grow exponentially. So that's why we can only do like the total number particle can only be like 8 or 7, maybe 7 for Bosonic case. That's the biggest it can do. But one probably can optimize the code a little bit to search more. But the improvement is that using N and S, it became a finite search rather than solving a thousand of nonlinear algebraic equations. They're all unitary CFTs.
C is bigger than one for some of them.
Not necessarily. And so.
For C less than one, they're all known, right? So.
No, it's a relation to CFT is a little more complicated, and so this is label. You can see this is 6 means how many particle type we have, but including parent fermion. And the subscript 0 means a central charge. So you can see, this is a table for fermions. And say, for example, let's do a simple one. So this one have a central charge 0, but this one have central charge 1/5. But 1/5 only modular 1/2. Because in this our theory, we only classify topological order modular this so-called invertible topological order. Modular is P-palapi Schubach-Nanker. P-palapi Schubach-Nanker have no topological extension, so we cannot see them. But so we can stack any P-palapi Schubach-Nanker on top of this to get new topological order, but that's all. So this 1/5 is a modular 1/2. And then you can see this one is a quarter. And these two are very special. 0 and a quarter actually have a so-called time reversal symmetry. Actually, you can see this. So actually, in the paper by Fodorovsky, Xie Chen, and Ashwin, they studied this as a surface state of a topological insulator. This particular topological order is a surface state. Because this one have a time reversal symmetry, but the anomalous one, because central charge is a quarter, not 0. And this one also have a time reversal symmetry because this quarter-quarter spin, you can see paired. They have same quantum dimension. So, but the central charge can be 1/7, can be 0. You know, central charge can be all different values. So it can be smaller than 1 and can be bigger than 1. And for the boson case, we also have central charge, but that's also in this form, the subscript. But the boson central charge is modular 8, because E8 quantum Hall states have a central charge 8. So we can determine central charge modular 8 from this bulk theory. Yeah. And so the realization of conformal field theory realizing this will also have a central charge can be bigger than 1. And smaller than 1, I don't know. Because we have a modular 1/2 modular 8, we can always construct a topological order with large central charge using complicated conformal field theory. Then you can stack a few E8 state or P-palapi Schubach-Nanker to reduce central charge if you like. So that's basically the situation.
Another question? Yeah? Can I understand the 24 as a suite?
I don't know. I don't understand 24. Yeah. You know, the C equal to 24 seems very special, but I don't understand why it's special. And so, but at least within this theory, C to 8 is special, not 24. Yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. Okay, yeah, we'll stop here.